Hello, my magical friends. My name's Ayumi. My pronouns are she, her, hers. And you're listening to Sparkle Side Chats with Magical Girl Ayu. Whether it's your first or 167th time listening, we welcome you to this space to celebrate magical girls from every corner of the world. We have some news, and I've watched some stuff, and we'll get to today's topic. So let's get started. So first thing in the news, I cannot remember if I briefly mentioned this before, but we did get an official date for Sweet and Sour Catch Teeny Ping. This is the fourth season of the Catch Teeny Ping franchise, a Korean magical girl series. This season, which is themed on sweets, of course, begins September 22nd in Korea. Next in the news, in the world of Miraculous World, which is these are specials that are set in the world of Miraculous, but do things a little bit different, oftentimes with characters going to different places outside of France and so on. So this time we got something a little bit different. Miraculous Paris, Tales of Shadybug and Claw Noir. So this is going to come out on October 21st on Disney Channel France. And this looks to be some sort of parallel universe where Ladybug and Cat Noir are villains. So that's cool. Next, we have an update about Burn the Witch. So if you're not familiar with this series, this is originally a very short comic by T.J. Kubo about this kind of side story set in the world of his hit series Bleach. Unsurprisingly, as Bleach is currently doing a sort of, I believe it's a revival slash reboot. I'm actually not 100% sure if it's a sequel or not because I don't watch it, but it is, you know, continuing to be successful. So they have announced that there's going to be a kind of episode 0.8 of Burn the Witch, which is a story set just before the original adaptation. No further news about when, but this is something to celebrate the 50th anniversary of Weekly Shonen Jump. So congrats, I suppose. And last but certainly not least, Precure All-Stars F is currently in theaters, the most recent Precure movie, and so I wanted to give a little update about the box office now that we have the numbers. So the numbers for this weekend, so from Friday to Sunday, as it was released on Friday the 15th, are currently at 437 million yen. This is pretty big because this is officially the largest opening weekend that a Precure film has had. I will talk more about my experience with the movie later as I contributed with going to see it twice. But yeah, it is really exciting to see the reactions to the movie and a lot of people going multiple times. You know, movie going in Japan is definitely as a hobby more expected to go multiple times to see your favorite film. So that's certainly a factor. The current record for Precure movie is a kind of rough tie between All-Stars DX 2, or Deluxe 2, and All-Stars Memories, which came out 5 years ago. So these are both at roughly 1.2 billion yen. So we'll see if the record is broken overall. It is predicted to be such. We already have the news that it's being released in several countries. So in Italy's case, it is being released only in a special screening one time at Luca Comic and Games 2023, with further news that it will be brought as well to Thailand, Laos, Cambodia, Taiwan, Hong Kong, and Macau. So that's pretty exciting. I believe that's all for the news. So let's move on to what I've been watching. So of course, Soaring Sky Precure episode 33 was fantastic. As expected, of course, you know, you have to get the big episode to get the new item now that there is a new member of the team. And we knew this was coming, but it was still very moving and I really enjoyed the episode a lot. It also was gorgeously animated. I mean, in general, this season has been, you know, no misses, basically. I've been having a great time. Which does lead me into Precure All-Stars F. So, as a heads up, I went to see the movie twice. Once on Friday, opening day, and then once again on Saturday because I was just so pumped and I just really had a great time. I did record an episode using questions that I gleaned from Twitter and Instagram and Discord. So that should be coming out either tomorrow or the next day. As soon as I can finish it, I will. So you'll get my full thoughts and spoilery feelings, etc. there. I think it's going to be a good little kind of reprieve considering today's topic. So I won't go into a lot of details here, but I just think, once again, this movie was just everything I wanted it to be and then some. I had an amazing time. I cried so much. I was moved. I was so surprised. I was delighted with the surprise. And, you know, as a longtime Precure fan, as someone who has watched every season now, I think that it just gives us even deeper meaning. Because, like, it's one thing to have an All-Stars movie that goes back to, you know, our original study with Precure, right? Black and white. We love them. We love them so much. But there is something about this movie really taking the time to harken back to every season in a way. And especially for me, you know, Splash Star, I feel, is very underrepresented. So seeing the Splash Star representation that I got was just fantastic. So I think that's everything that I have to say up here. So let's move on to today's topic. So today we do have a bit of a bummer episode, I'm not going to lie, but I still think is hopefully going to be an educational one for anyone who has not watched Magical Girl Sight, Maho Shoujo Saito. Let's see, where do we begin? This is a darker series, right? This is a horror Magical Girl series. And basically, I wanted to do my best with this episode to not just talk about the show itself, but also to be an episode for people to listen to if they haven't watched the series and they want to know what happens, but they don't want to actually watch the series, which I completely understand due to the content of it. And we'll get into the content warnings in a minute. So I did my best to, you know, really get more into describing the plot. But I didn't want to get into a lot of detail about, like, exactly what characters suffer as much as I could, right? I tried to keep a balance there, so I hope that I did a good job there. And, of course, I was more than delighted to find out that one of my Twitter mutuals was a viewer of this series and had a positive experience with it, because that is hard to find. So yeah, for today's episode, I have Yase, who is known as Nakimushi Art on the socials. They're an artist. They do comics. I had a really great time with them, but I just want to warn quickly that there seem to have been some audio issues on their end. So unfortunately, there are some times where they don't sound as clear as I would like them to have. And as try as I might to, like, raise the volume, it's more of a sounding muffled kind of problem more than anything. So unfortunately, there might be some times where it is a little bit difficult to understand them. I will be happy to take feedback from you all. So if you find there's anything that, like, becomes completely incoherent, I will edit this in post and add some notes for people to get some, like, summaries, just like to mention what they said, because it is important to be able to listen to my guests. Once again, I do apologize for that audio quality problem. But yes, otherwise, you know, had a good time with them. And let's get into the content warning. So once again, you know, this is going to be a bit of a bummer episode. If you don't want to listen, I completely understand. Thank you for listening thus far. If you would like to stop here, I understand, you know, you don't have to listen completely to a whole podcast in order to support the podcaster. You can always just download the episode and delete it from your phone. That's something you can do with any podcast, honestly, to support them. So I appreciate you coming this far, right? If you're not interested, we'll see you next time. Again, the All-Stars F episode will be coming out soon on the main feed. But yeah, we have to give quite a laundry list of trigger warnings here, but, you know, this is a very serious series and very serious topic. So yeah, generally speaking, there is a lot of violence, particularly violence against children, domestic violence, sexual violence, bullying, all manner of things. There's also self-harm and mentions of suicide. There is a lot of mind control as well. There is a lot of various kinds of queerphobia, a lot of transmisogyny, and unfortunately we do talk a little bit about incest. Oh, I forgot to mention in terms of the sexual violence, there is a case of sexual violence against a minor at the hands of a police officer as well. So that's like many, many, many layers of terrible. I believe that's everything. I do apologize. If there's anything I forgot, I will keep it in the show notes. So please double check that before you get into the rest of the episode. I don't want anyone to go in blind with such a heavy topic. So again, we do not go into gruesome detail about the events of the series, only the details that are important in order to understand what the story is. So if you feel like you want to know what the story is, but you don't want to watch it for yourself, I hope that this can become a resource for that. That's the main reason why I rambled on about the plot in our main chat, but I think I've rambled enough up top here. So with that, please enjoy today's episode with Yase about Magical Girl Sight. So we're here to talk about Magical Girl Sight, the TV series adapted from a comic from 2018.
Mm-hmm.
And I am pretty excited for our guest today. So yeah, can you please introduce yourself?
Sure, yeah. Hi, my name is Yase. My pronouns are they, them, and I'm an artist and a mangaka.
Yeah, and I found out, you know, we follow each other on Twitter, and I found out kind of out of nowhere that you were like referencing this show, and I was like, hold on a second, they watch this show. I finally got someone to talk to about it, because like I watched this show for the first time a while back for the sake of like knowing it for the genre, and I definitely felt like it would, you know, make an obvious, very interesting conversation about the state of the genre. And in a lot of ways, this is like the most infamous of the dark magical girl shows.
Yeah.
From the 2010s. So, you know, it was definitely something that needed to be talked about at some point. But before we get into that, Yase, what is your history with the magical girl genre?
My history with magical girls goes way back. I watched my first magical girl anime around the time I was like, in kindergarten. I started with Precure, like with Nagisa, and I'm not sure, like, I don't know too much about Precure because I really only watched this one. I'm not sure if it was the first one, but yeah, I really like them. Like, I like the whole aspect of, you know, one of them being like very tomboyish and then being like, I guess, Precure Black, and then the other one was like really like feminine and cute, and then like she's Precure White, and I really like that one. And then before that, I think the very first magical girl anime I've ever watched was Kamikaze Kaito no Jean.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I love Arina Tanimura, so I really love her art style. I thought the anime was so pretty. I like the whole aspect of, I guess, becoming someone else to protect what's important to you, because it's not always the case, but a lot of times, you know, these girls, like, especially around the time where a lot of shonen was in focus, it was so cool to see, like, girls of all types, with all types of characteristics, to just go on this journey where they, I guess, reinvent themselves or grow up, I guess, get the power to change something, because I feel like all of us want that, you know, like, just change and become something great so we can do what we want to achieve. If it's to, you know, become more confident or to protect others or whatever. So I just always liked Magical Girls for that, because it was just usually these very likable characters just getting a chance to do greatness.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's definitely a driving factor for a lot of fans of the genre. So, I guess more recently, are there any other shows that you watch? I mean, other than Magical Girl Slight, of course.
Yes, which is really surprising, or maybe not. So I did watch Madoka, and I guess the most surprising part is I watched Madoka after I watched Magical Girl Slight.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I was a big like Madoka fan. I watched Magia Record just recently.
Did you like it as much, or
I did like it. I was just confused for most of the
sure,
ending.
sure. Yeah, I think that it's very complicated because they were trying to adapt this game into a TV show, and there's so much to going on in the game, and of course, like all these side stories and stuff that like it's hard to say if they really executed it well. And then there were like delays and things, so that didn't really help with the pacing. So yeah, it'll be interesting to cover on the podcast as well, because it's interesting, but it's definitely like if you don't do your homework, it's very confusing.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. Especially if like I didn't know at first. I found out like I guess in the middle that it's like from a game, and then I got really interested in the game, but then like the game wasn't even playable anymore, and I was like, well, that's not great.
Yeah,
For me.
R.I.P.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are there any other like major series that you've seen in more recent years?
I haven't. I added some of the newer Magical Girl series like on my list because I've seen some new ones come out that I thought looked interesting. But I think I watched Magia Records like last year, so that was the most recent one. And then I
Oh,
watched
okay.
Madoka like I think the year before that. Like I was a little late with everything, honestly.
Yeah, no problem, no judgment there. We all have our different paces and so on. Everyone comes to things at different times. But yeah, so I guess I'm curious, what are the Magical Girl shows that you have on your to watch list?
I would have to look for a second because it's a lot of them.
Okay, no pressure. If you don't know, it's fine, it's fine. I was just curious. But yeah, no big deal.
Yeah, I have I added Magical Destroyers,
Okay,
and Sky Pretty Cure, and then I wanted to rewatch Thora Me again.
Ah,
I
yeah,
watched that one in
that's good.
kindergarten last too, and I loved it. Like I remember loving Thora Me a lot.
Awesome. So, Magical Destroyers, I have a feeling you'll like it if you enjoyed Sight at all.
Okay.
Yeah, it's
Oh, okay.
pretty wild. Yeah. But yeah, so getting into today's topic, so Magical Girl Slight, this is one of the peak dark shows of the 2010s. This started as a comic by Kentaro Sato in 2013, which ended in 2019, and then was followed by a sequel, Magical Girl Slight Sept, I think it is. Looks like it's short for September. I don't actually know because I haven't read it, but yeah, we'll talk a tiny bit about some of the comic stuff because it's relevant to me, relevant to what can be enjoyed from the show. Because even though it is a very, very dark series, I do think that in the end, there's still a lot of interesting stuff here as far as like being a magical girl series in general. But just for anyone who has not checked out the series yet, basically, it starts with this girl, Aya Atsugi, who is just in the most like horrible of situations. She is very aggressively, violently bullied at school, and she's also being violently abused at home by her older brother, Kaname. And it's in the middle of this despair where she is feeling like, quite literally suicidal, that she is given the chance to find this magical girl, Saito. That's quite literally the name, Mahou Shoujo Saito. So she goes on and talks to this person that we later find out is named Nana, who is like this character that looks kind of like just a creepy, like black and white, like schoolgirl with pigtails, but like a really like serious, heavy face. And Nana talks to her about how, like, if she would like, she can get this magic wand and become a magical girl, and all she would have to do is use it and accept the terms in that way.
And you know, she does in the middle of like being chased down by, well, someone trying to literally like assault her, and in the middle of that, she uses this stick, which is her wand is this gun that's heart shaped. It looks quite cute, actually, in a way. When she shoots someone with it, it surrounds them with this pink cloud that transports them somewhere else. And as she's discovering this ability, both the one bully and the boy who was going to possibly rape her get killed by a truck or by a train, rather, as she basically just kind of unconsciously sent them there. And that's how the show starts. So it's, you know, very, very dark from the very beginning. And as she meets other magical girls and learns the rules of the world and learns of the magical hunter, who is a magical girl who is killing other magical girls in order to steal their magic wands, and all these other things, you know, it just keeps getting into darker and darker territory. But in the end is, yeah, again, very interesting. So, Yessa, can you tell us how you got into Magical Girl Sight?
Yes. So I was searching for new anime at the time, and I think it was like, yeah, I think it was the year it came out, actually. I think it was in 2018. And I am a big fan of psychological horror in like any medium. So I saw like the cover, like with the characters. It didn't say too much yet, but then I saw the horror tag, and I was like, that's interesting. Like, I don't think I've seen it like this before. Like, that's actually very interesting. So I started it, and yeah, the first episode was definitely a gut punch. I was definitely surprised. Then I was like, wow, I wonder, okay, like, now I really want to know where this is going, because I thought it had a lot of, the concept had a lot of potential in my eyes, so I just wanted to see where it goes. And then I ended up binging it, basically.
I think it's so fascinating because, like, yeah, the premise, you know, of course, horror in general is a whole thing, and I think that, like, the way that, you know, this show could be handled, I do think there is a way for this kind of show to be, like, good in the end, right? So, I mean, even Wonder Egg Priority a few years ago also tackled, you know, pretty dark topics, and was able to do so in a way that really felt like it understood the situations a lot better. Here it was like just like ridiculous amounts of sadness and darkness. And certainly there are people out there who suffer like very horrific, violent things, but at the same time it was like to what end is this happening? And like the yeah, just some of the ways that the characters are handled and stuff, I felt very unclear as to how I'm supposed to feel about what's going on. Like, the writing is so all over the place sometimes.
I agree. I think there were a lot of moments where I also thought, like, I'm not sure if this is spreading awareness or if this is just, I guess, like, torture porn. Because it really felt like that sometimes. But then looking at, I guess, the source material, the anime actually handled a lot of things better than the manga, in my opinion.
Yeah, that makes sense. That sounds right to me, honestly. From the things I know about the source material, it's like, oh boy.
The manga definitely has a lot of, like, bias in there, and I'm definitely side-eyeing the manga right now, like, unfortunately.
Yes. He is still, you know, working in horror, but luckily Sato is currently has not done any magical girls since this ended, so thank the Lord. And actually, speaking of which, I should mention that this is technically a prequel to his first magical girl series, which is Magical Girl Apocalypse. Which, yes, I haven't checked that out yet, but I know that for a lot of comic readers, that was another big one. So I'm definitely curious to check it out, but I'm also very concerned.
Do you know
All I really know about it is that like it is the end of the world and there are like lots of magical girls. The events of Sight would lead to that, basically.
Yeah, if you want to know the premise, like, without too many spoilers, it's literally just, it starts at a school. It kind of gave me big Dead Man Wonderland vibes, like a little bit. And it starts in the school, and this boy is in his classroom, just the typical thing, just going on about how boring his life is, and how nothing great ever happens, and apathetic he's become towards daily life. And then one day, like, he's just like, I wish something would happen. And then basically, like, this is really, really simplified, but it starts raining magical girls and they start killing everybody.
Okay, I see.
It's great.
Wow. Well, there we go. So for anyone who was curious about it, they can check it out. I mean, it is, yeah, it's been translated and everything just as this series has, so there's enough of an audience for it that translators thought it was worth the work. So there's that. But yeah, so you can't really speak to Apocalypse, but at least with this series, we have this concept, right? And right away it's like for Aya, her main bully at school is Sarina, who just like does again just absolutely terrible, absurd levels of bullying to her, to the point where it seems like she might literally kill this girl at some point. And she does get over the edge and personally doesn't understand what happened when Aya was being pursued, but she ends up like getting so far as to trying to, cut her tongue out with a box cutter, because she thinks for sure Aya is responsible for what happened, even though she doesn't understand how it did. And it's there that we get the second magical girl, who is Tsuno Yatsumura. I should mention Aya and Tsuno, they do, I will use their given names for this series, but they do generally talk to each other and refer to each other by their surnames throughout the show. But yeah, so Tsuyuno's ability is to stop time. She has a smartphone that does this, and she can also input someone's name into the app that stops time and is able to let them also enjoy that, paused time with her. So she does that. She has no concern with using that box cutter to slice open Serena's throat. And then takes her along to explain to her the rules. So I wanted to bring up the rules in particular because all the like super dark stuff about the magical girl system is just really given to you right away, and I think that's something to acknowledge as well. But basically, so everyone has a different wand, and every magical girl can use a wand, and other people can use magical girl wands. They just have to have the item in their hand. But essentially, what happens when someone uses the wand, their eyes and hair change color, and blood comes out of a particular orifice of their body. It's different for every person. So, for example, for Aya, it comes out of her eyes. Once they start using it, the magical girl who was given the wand in the first place, they get a mark on their wrist, which shows how much life they have left using that weapon. And again, we have like the magical hunter who is. Apparently, at the beginning, Tsuno believes has killed her best friend, Rino Shioi, but later we discovered that it was Rina herself who used a wand which could change her appearance in photos, which is wow. There's like the things that a lot of wands can do are really out there sometimes. There's so many of them and everything. And
The
in the end,
wand.
there are
Oh,
so
sorry.
many magical girls.
The way the wands look is also so like we say wand, but the wands are like their cell phones. In Aya's case, they're like a toy gun, and then like in Rina's case, it's like a photo camera, or there's just all kinds of objects. They're really out there.
The one that is her main one for Farina is that hammer, but she's basically been killing magical girls and taking away their
Yes,
wands.
that's
And
the
so I use wand because that's the term they use in the series, right, for these items.
one.
But yeah, so, like for example, there's the mechanical pencil, which can create a force field around you. There's another item which can also move things around at will, and so on. So there's just a lot of different
I
things.
like the hammer that was literally just there to like crush people. Like it was just a giant hammer. It was so straightforward.
Yeah, and A lot of the wands do seem to be kind of related to the sorrow that these girls feel. So we can generally assume that every magical girl here has gone through some great tragedies and are so full of misfortune that they have been given this opportunity.
The site does note that when it pops up for Aya at first, they're like, "Oh, you're really unfortunate, and that's why you're getting the chance to be a magical girl." So yeah, it's really just like basically a site for girls who are like really tortured, and thus they can become magical girls. Which also led it like I think this is why a lot of people started comparing it to like I guess Madoka, which I personally didn't agree with though.
Yeah, we could definitely get into that. I have feelings about that comparison. I don't think it's necessarily warranted, but in any case, yes. So, as Aya's adventures continue with Tsuno and then with Rina, who Rina ends up like passing out because she has gotten very close to using up her own life, like magically speaking. But we had gotten information from her that she was trying to get ready for something called Tempest, which she had learned from their site administrator, Nana. She knew that this event would destroy the world, and it ha would happen after a certain number of people died. And so she's just trying to survive, and that's why she's been doing the magical hunter stuff. But in any case, she gets hospitalized, and so now we have to figure out how to handle that. And then episode 3, we get formally introduced to another magical girl who is the idol Nijimi. So Nijimi is like a 14-year-old girl who, as an idol on the surface seems like the ultimate, like super, super cute girl. She's part of this idol group called Inoasobi or Dog Play. Yeah, that's fair, that's fair. But like she definitely is like much smaller, much cuter, and like very, absurdly like popular as an idol, even though she's very recently on the scene. And we see throughout the series one of her like super fans, Naoto, who's just like this guy who's just like a shut-in, and all he does is talk about and think about how much he loves his perfect idol. And yeah, it's just quite an unhealthy obsession, obviously.
Yeah, he's very
Yeah.
he's definitely a stalker and a creep and just not someone like that someone would want to have as a fan for sure.
So now Aya and Tsuno have a new dilemma. They don't want Rina to survive exactly, right? Because like she's clearly a terrible person, but at the same time she's got information that they need, so they have to figure out a way. They want to look for more magical girls in order to find someone who would be capable of helping heal her to bring her back to full consciousness. They go through her book of magical girls that she had had to kill them, and they recognize Nijimi, so they approach her. And Nijimi is super excited about finding more magical girls, and she ends up inviting them to her apartment after she finishes work. And that's where she reveals her own wand is
Oh
her panties.
boy.
Yeah, it's
Oh,
rough.
I felt so weird about that, yeah.
So her panties give her the ability to control people, basically. When she's wearing them, she just tells people what to do, and they have to do it. Their body will move automatically, etc. It's quite dangerous weapon to have, and she uses it to turn some of her fans into devoted servants of her apartment, which is pretty weird. And but they respect that this is like a very powerful wand, but it's not what they need to heal the magical girl that they have at the hospital. And they don't tell her who is there. They just say that they're trying to heal another magical girl who's at the hospital. And we also see that, like, she is very happy to meet other magical girls, but then Nijimi does recall that, she had a best friend who was also a magical girl, but she lost her to the magical hunter. And if there's one thing about Nijimi, she feels her feelings very strongly. And so when this topic comes up, she gets into this like frenzy, and her eyes just get wide, and she's just, feverishly like so devoted to the idea of killing the magical hunter, which is an understandable position to have. And we should also mention, just like throughout the series, as Aya's going through all this stuff, you know, she's basically always with Tsuyuno or other girls, and thus she is never able to be alone, such that, like, she can't be targeted by Kaname anymore, mm-hmm. and he is stressing out about this.
Because, yes, so, because he's abusing her, because he is enduring abuse from their father, and Aya was his punching bag, and now his punching bag is not around. I really hate him.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think you're supposed to hate him. He is a horrible human in so many ways. He hates everyone. He thinks that he's the only, like, good person in the world. It's absolutely, he's revolting.
You have characters that endure abuse and then abuse others, and you can still feel for them somehow, right? Because you don't justify their actions, but, like, you have sympathy. But, like, with Kaname, I just straight up hated him. Like, even when they explained why he does the things, like, he is so repulsive. Like, I really hate him. Like, it's really rough to get through whatever story has to do with him. It's very rough.
He's despicable in every way. Mm-hmm. And so one thing about this series is the way that they do the previews for the next episode, they actually have him in the darkness, like, pondering when he's going to be able to see Aya again, because he's, like, missing his sandbag or whatever, and it's it's disgusting. But again, it's like, it's very clear we're not supposed to like Kaname. He's like a horrible human. But yeah, and it's like very frustrating, because like every time we see him walking around the street, you can see, like, you know, every girl that passes him by is like, wow, that guy's so handsome, he's so cool, he's so cute, or whatever. And meanwhile, he's just like, I'm thinking about murder all the time. But yeah, and then episode 4, we see that Sarina, who had, again, had her throat slit in the magical girl time space, by Tsuyuno, she is actually at the hospital, and so she sees that the girls are there. She goes to see who they've been visiting, and that's when she encounters Nana, who gives her the power to become a magical girl herself. And so her wand is a yo-yo that can slice things cleanly with a string. It's... it can be disturbing, but there's that. So in episode 4, Tsuyuno didn't go to school, so we don't know exactly why. We had seen that she had, like, fallen, possibly weakened again, because she's been using magical powers. We don't know for how long, but we do get in this episode the story from Aya about how the bullying started. And the bullying story, it's basically Aya has always been very shy, right? Just like the shyest girl ever. So she has a lot of trouble talking to strangers. When she first came to the school, she was having a lot of trouble because she was so soft-spoken, and Sarina actually kind of tried to defend her from a teacher who was calling her out and asking her to, like, repeat something in class. And Aya didn't say thank you because she was too shy, and I guess Sarina and her friends took that personally, and that's how the bullying began. In my opinion, not really an excuse for the bullying she endures, but that's the excuse the show gives.
It's like Kaname Sarina is not a good person.
Yes, yes. There's a lot of characters that are, like, not good people in the series,
basically. Yeah, that's a good warning.
Yes. But also in this episode, Nijimi decides to retire from being an idol and transfer to Aya and Tsuyuno's school, even going to their class. And, of course, a lot of people are very overjoyed that a famous idol has come to their school. Naoto, meanwhile, is devastated that his idol has retired. Again, she's only 14, so, you know, it's not like she can't go back to the business or whatever. Just, like, she's taking a break to focus on school, allegedly.
His apartment is, like, this trash apartment. Like, typical, like... You know, like, the Hikikomori apartment, like, just trashed, and there's just posters of Aya, like, not Aya, sorry, of Nijimin, like, everywhere. Just everywhere. Mm-hmm. It's so creepy.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, so all that's going on. We also see in this episode that, like, Kaname, it does get beaten by his father because his grades are falling. And I should mention, like, it's clear from the beginning that when it comes to the adults in this series, they either, like, know that bad things are happening to these kids and don't care, or, like, they just have no idea. So, like, for example, with with Aya and Kaname's parents, it seems very clear that they have no idea that he is beating her, or like they don't seem to acknowledge Aya much at all. It's very sad. But yeah, so at the end of episode 4, Aya decides to go to see Tsuyuno to figure out why she hadn't come to school, and it's there that she sees something quite disturbing as well. So we had seen, like, kind of vaguely before that the reason that Tsuyuno became a magical girl is because when she was a kid, her parents were murdered. But in this episode, we see that the man who murdered her parents is, like, all tied up is not the right word, because it's, like, all in metal. Like, he's, like, strapped down to this thing, clearly, like, to be tortured, and so on. Yeah, it's quite a disturbing sight. And yes. And so in episode 5, Sayana also follows them and explains that she had told Nijimi where Rina was, because that's kind of the real reason why she was at the school, is because she wanted to find the magical hunter and kill her. But while she's there, like, Nijimi is, we see her at the same time going to the hospital, but she can't kill Rina because Rina is being protected by a force field that Tsuyuno had put up. So, you know, everyone's frustrated all around, and Sarina attacks Aya. They have a big fight. Tsuyuno's kind of out, down for the count, because she's kind of too weak at the moment, but yeah, she and Aya do have a fight, both physically and then also like verbally, because Aya is being protected by the force field wand this time. And, you know, she finally is able to really express herself for the first time to her own bully. It's like, it seems like it's going to be very much like a kind of big sense of relief for her to explain how she wanted to die every day and everything.
Yeah, it's also the first time you really see Aya like yell at someone and be angry. And she's usually very timid and soft, and she always thinks about others and cares about others. So seeing her actually upset at someone, like, that's really, it was a very, very strong scene.
Yes, yes. And, you know, with all of that, Sarina still tears her down by saying, like, I don't care. Like, I don't care that you felt that way. And it's, like, very tragic. But because of their fighting, the building starts to crumble to pieces around them. So Aya uses her own wand at the last minute to teleport Sarina out of there safely. And then, yeah, we see that Aya also is, you know, remains protected by the force field with Tsuyuno. So when the first responders come to the building, they see them down in the building, like, with the force field still. And they're like, we don't understand what's going on, but okay, let's get these girls to the hospital. And we also see Detective Mizumi for the first time, who is this this adult man with suspiciously light blue hair. I'll put it that way. meanwhile, Nijimi realizes that Aya and Tsuyuno had been protecting Rina, and she doesn't really know why, but she blames them, like, thinks they're protecting her, basically, knowing that she wanted to kill her. So she decides to go to Aya's house to find out if she's there. And unfortunately, because their parents are away checking on Aya at the hospital, Kaname is the one who answers the door, and Nijimi immediately falls in love with him, because, as we said the whole episode, like, everyone who sees him seems to think he's, like, very hot. Yeah, Nijimi in particular, like, again, she feels things so much. So she, like, immediately just goes absolutely mad for him, and he knows what's going on, and he's like, all right, time to take advantage, because he has been putting together that something is going on with Aya, suddenly having friends, which has never happened before, and then also he finds the term magical girl site in her search history on her own computer. So he decides that he's going to take advantage of Nijimi's new crush on him to figure out what's going on. And also, she's been found by Naoto, who is now stalking her directly, and sees Kaname as a threat. He sees her fall in love with him and is like, my angel has been taken. What's going on? And okay. And then in episode 6, we meet a gray-haired magical girl named Kosame, who's a bit strange, but she heals Rina and the other girls at the hospital. Her wand is a box cutter, which, if she cuts herself with it, her blood becomes basically like a panacea. It heals everything.
Yeah, I felt weird about that. Like, especially with how she's portrayed and everything, like, they could have made it a syringe or something. The fact that they just threw in cell phone there, like, that was just so odd.
Yeah. So, like, she's definitely depicted as being, like, quite literally mentally ill. So, like, when she first meets Dina, she's like freaking out suddenly because Dina's like yelling at her, asking what's going on. And she's like, please, please, please don't yell at me. Don't yell at me. And like, she like suddenly downs a ton of pills. It's a lot. It's quite the introduction. But after that, she remains calm for the rest of the show. So at least that's
It
okay. But
was a lot of pills.
it really was. Yeah, but she explains her situation, and she also explains that she has a different site administrator from a different magical girl site. So, like, basically, if the ra a random person tries to find the magical girl site on their own computer, they can't find it. These girls all can if they connect their wands to their computers. But yeah, basically, like, it's just a different administrator. All the administrators have are like basically illustrated in black and white and have very weird faces. In their case, theirs has like a kind of no style mask. They're learning a bit more about the world. There's even more than they expected. But now that everyone is conscious and healed up, they can talk about Tempest, and we see that the administrators are also like, why are these magical girls figuring things out? We don't like that. Something has to be done about it. And we also see that at the center of the Tempest, which is like the basic depiction is like this giant mountain with a bunch of hands, and all the sadness seems to be approaching in a way, not gonna lie, it just looks like a bunch of sperm just going towards an egg. I think that's very deliberate imagery there. And so we see like that's basically what Tempest looks like. And if they go to the website and see Tempest there, they see that constant countdown that they don't quite understand.
It was definitely August. I think it was like August 11th or 12th or something. It's just counting down towards it. It was so ominous the first time I saw it. Especially because I think I watched it around August too. So yeah, it made me very uncomfortable.
Yeah, of course, if it's like a literal date that is about to happen, that's like very threatening. Yes, everyone is healed up. Aya and Tsuno can go to Aya's home, and Tsuno is going to stay there because Tsuno no longer has a house. It's been demolished by magical girl nonsense. And then in episode 7, we get to meet the other members of what's basically Kosame's team, with the other administrator. So we get Sayaki, Asahi, Mikari, and Kiyoharu. And they all, they're not necessarily all friends either. In particular, Kiyoharu is trans, and Mikari really loves to be extremely transphobic to her.
Oh my God, that's a huge warning. Huge, like, for anyone who wants to watch this. This show is not LGBTQ friendly, like, at all.
Yeah, it's so on the one hand, I think it's very clear from a lot of the stuff about how the rules are explained, they make it clear that only girls really can be magical girls, especially by the end they explain that. So I think it's from the rules of the show, the rules of the magical girl system, Kiyoharu is a girl for sure, but a lot of characters around her are definitely very transphobic, yes. So you have to be careful. And it's a tough situation where it's like, with the topic of like having this very dark show of people going through very dark things, it kind of makes sense that if they're going to add a trans character, that she would have to go through transphobia. It does suck though. So we see that she goes through a lot of like just general awfulness from a lot of people around her, but at the very least, she is technically a girl in this horrible system of magical girls. But yeah, they all have different abilities. So like Sayaki has a blade that can cut through, like basically if anything it cuts also freezes. And then Asahi is like very, very fast. Mikari also has her wand is like a broom, so she's basically like a witch. Yeah. And then Kiyoharu has telepathy with her ring. And so she's pretty much a major character for the rest of the series because of her telepathy, because people cannot keep secrets around her. But yeah, and so the girls all realize they kind of have to work together, whether they like it or not, especially Nijimi is not happy about the idea. And then Rina like shows up at school. It's like, hey, I'm transferring to your school too. Yijimi immediately tries to kill her, and so Tsuyuno and Aya have to stop her, which results in them removing her panties in front of everyone, yeah. Which is not great.
Then they just get thrown on by the boys. Oh my god.
They were very excited about that. Yeah. I mean, teen boys, I don't know what you would expect. But basically, like, yeah, Tsuyuno runs off with them and hides them somewhere, and no one does anything about this. Like, the girls don't get in trouble for this behavior. It's really weird. But yeah, so, you know, for her safety, they have Rina also stay at Aya's house. Rina's not really psyched about this idea, though. But because of all that, like, Kaname is really putting together, like, yeah, these are definitely all magical girls that's going on here. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so we see at the end of this episode, we do get a scene where Aya and Tsuyuno are kind of bonding in the bath. And, well, Rina is also there, but it's mostly about their friendship and everything. And then Aya gets a call from Kosame about a message that she had gotten from Kiyoharu, who had picked up something from her telepathy. And episode 8. So basically after this, everything starts to really go down. Like, you thought things were bad before episode 8, and then onto the rest of the series is where things get really intense.
Yeah.
You know, Naoto is continuing to stalk Nijimi, and he sees her and Kaname on another date. And he has decided that he is going to attack and kill Kaname. He has made that his new mission in life, because he is obsessed. And we get a seemingly, you know, just a general sweet episode with the magical girls all going to the beach together. You know, we get to see them, you know, finally relaxing, enjoying their time together. Even the girls who seemingly are, like, you know, sworn enemies and everything, mm-hmm. they're still all getting along. I mean, it's very clear the only reason why Nijimi is now getting along with Rina to any capacity is because she doesn't have her wand anymore. But yeah, so, you know, we get a nice moment, especially with Aya and Tsuyuno. They go parasailing together, and it's very cute. There's, you know, a lot of good friendship bonding stuff. But then, when they go back to their locker room, it's revealed that Nijimi's panties, or her wand, are missing. Mm-hmm. So Tsuyuno had them and had brought them with them, but they don't know where they are. Nijimi realizes that Kaname must have taken them because she had actually explained everything to him, the whole system and everything. Because, well, what happened was, you know, we have to be clear, like, he is manipulating her, you know, to hell. And he made it out to be like, he is trying to understand what's going on because he heard about the magical girl site and he is worried for Nijimi. And,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So she falls for it and tells him everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then we see that Naoto and Kaname are also at the beach. And Naoto tries to attack Kaname, but he stops him easily because he is wearing the panties. And it's a very intense scene of him just, like, torturing him with this information and just bullying him, you know, verbally, before finally using the magic to make him go into the water and kill himself. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, as this happens, Aya also sees everything and is burdened with this knowledge, but she doesn't really know what to do because she is naturally very terrified of her brother, who mm-hmm. she already knew to be abusive before he had that powers. But Kiyoharu is able to piece that information together. And Detective Misumi also appears to see, like, the site of the suicide, the apparent suicide, but he thinks it's very suspicious. And he sees Naoto's letter, which he had written before, about how he was going to kill Kaname.
Mm-hmm.
He had written out his full name, right? Kaname Asagiri. So, mm-hmm. yeah. Finally, at the end of this episode, we see that, like, you know, the girls are going to talk to Kiyoharu. You know, Kosame's team is going to try to figure out what's going on, because they know that Kiyoharu knows something.
Mm-hmm.
And then in episode 9, Nijimi and Kaname meet, and she thinks that they're going to meet up so that he can give her back her wand, but he reveals his true self to her, and she is burdened with shock. But also, because he has been wearing the panties the whole time, he is now fully controlling her as well. Before it can get, like, really, really bad for Nijimi herself, you know, the other magical girls do come in. The violence gets pretty intense here, and the girls end up having to run away, going to Sayuki's house. where the other girls have been staying, and that's when Aya reveals that, like, she knows it's Kaname, and of course the other girls are first very angry that she didn't say right away, but Tsuno, like, understands that this is, it's deeper than that, like, she's afraid of him and all of that. But because she feels responsible, Aya uses Kosame's wand, you know, cutting herself to heal Kyo, to who has been greatly injured. And then Kaname appears and immediately just makes everyone stop what they're doing, and is just horrible, absolutely awful to everyone. He sees the situation with Aya. Again, he had a full description of all the different wands and everything, so he knows that, like, her blood is currently, like, currently has healing powers, and he had also taken quite a blow too, so he drinks the blood directly from her hand. It's quite disgusting. Mm-hmm. Nijimi is still under his control, and you know, everyone is trying to stop him, but they can't move because he made everyone freeze. But Kiyoharu is able to use her telepathy to reach out to Nijimi, and that gets her to kind of, like, break out of the spell. But because, again, Nijimi feels everything so much, instead of, like, playing it cool and, like, trying to calmly handle the situation or pretend to still be under his control, she just immediately goes into super kill mode and tries to go after him, and he attacks her because he is using, he was playing with Sayuki's sword, so he just, like, cuts her pretty deeply, and it's really intense. So this episode we also get to learn about Nijimi's life, you know, why she became an idol, and also how she became a magical girl, because, of course, she also had devastation in her own life. In her case, her parents had been late on debt payments on their house, and the loan sharks were quite awful to them, and the stress caused her father to commit suicide, and she ended up becoming an idol and, you know, using her abilities to erase memories, more or less. So she erased her mother's memory and her brother's memory, so they don't even remember what happened with her father, mm-hmm. Or anything like that. She also erased the memories of the loan sharks, so the debt is erased, so that's nice. Mm-hmm. And then she moved on to becoming an idol because, like, all she wants in the world is to see people smile. And so, you know, when she smiles and people smile back at her, that's, like, her greatest happiness. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, she's, you know, reliving all this stuff as she is dying. And in her final moments, she, you know, again, so full of rage, she grabs a nearby glass bottle, breaks it, and shoves it deep into Kaname's neck. It's, again, really violent, but this one is quite satisfying, I want to say. Yeah. So he seems to be about to use the box cutter to cut up Aya so that he can heal himself again, because at this point, she has been quite weakened, because, of course, when you lose blood, that, you know, weakens your body. Mm-hmm. But before he can, someone invisible steps on his arm, and smoke fills the room. And then the girls all wake up. Aya and the others confirm that Nijimi has, in fact, died. Mm-hmm. And they're all quite devastated because, you know, they didn't want anyone else to die. And, you know, Nijimi didn't necessarily deserve any of that stuff that happened. But yes, so episode 10, which begins with the opening sung by Nana, as opposed to the regular singers, mm-hmm. with a lot of song changes to the imagery. It starts with Nijimi's death being made public. Aya is not leaving her room, and Irina and Tsuno discuss what happened that night and trying to figure out who saved them from Kaname, because they don't know. And also, they don't know where their wands have gone to. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Detective Misumi is at the Atsugiri home because Kaname has now become a suspect in that suicide situation with Naoto, and he's missing, but his parents are sure that he's done nothing wrong. Pretty wild, right? Aya thinks over what happened to Nijimi and their friendship and how she has to become stronger, which is something that Tsuno tells her again and again throughout the show, that, like, she wants her to become stronger because she knows she can be. Mm-hmm. And she decides that to make a promise that she will risk her life, you know, for the sake of protecting everyone. And Sarina approaches her, and Sarina has been kind of missing for half the show. Yeah. She was, like, missing from school, and now she's been, like, running around in this robe like she's a wizard or something. And it turns out she has everyone's wands. Like, she picked it up from that original scene back when the building collapsed. So, she goes up to Aya and is like, are you willing to bet on that? Like, are we going to really do this? And we get to Nijimi's funeral. We see, like, I think hundreds of men outside, all just a wailing and sadness because their idol has died. Yeah. And it's like, okay, but she was a person. Relax, guys.
That whole aspect of her also just being like a 14-year-old girl, like, everything is just so uncomfortable.
Yeah, there's definitely more to the idol side of things that we can discuss later, because there's a lot of, like, extra, like, problematic elements with a lot of characters, but especially her. But yeah, so then at the funeral, all the magical girls pay their respects. We also see her mother and brother, and the family leaves, and that's when we see Nana, the administrator, waiting outside patiently. And Aya goes to the girls and shoots them with her gun. And then the funeral home collapses. So it seems that the idea was for Nana to just kill off all the girls at once in this, like, one fell swoop. And Detective Misumi, of all characters, comes up to Nana and talks to her about what's going on. So it's clear they know each other already. And also, we learn from this that Misumi has locked up Kaname. He is the one that stopped them. And we see that Kaname is somewhere in the dark, naked and locked up, tied up somewhere. So, yeah, that's interesting. And then, now that the girls are all safe elsewhere, Aya explains to them that she and Sarita have all the wands, but she doesn't want to give them back to anyone because she wants to fight for everyone instead, so that they can return to their normal lives and they don't have to be pursued by the administrator. But all the girls are furious. They're like, no, that's our choice and we want to stay and we want to fight too. So that is able to, especially Tsuno and Aya's friendship in particular, that convinces everyone. And so Sarita does give out all the wands back, and now it becomes, you know, with our final two episodes, it's going to become the magical girls versus the administrators. Yeah. And so episode 11, you know, at the beginning of the episode, they're still presumed to be dead, right? Nana didn't check for bodies, which was her mistake. but the magical girls did figure out how to go after the administrators. So they first end up, you know, basically luring out Ni, who is this one who is wearing, like, a boyish costume but also has, like, a hyotoko mask and and definitely generally sounds like a boy. They'll fight, well, at least a bunch of them do fight him at this school. It's like a school late at night. I actually don't know if the school is functioning, but whatever. And then they get him on the rooftop, and that's when, you know, they finally do kill Ni. And in that, Ni's body is, like, reverted back to its original form, which is very clearly a girl. So they don't know what's up with that.
Who knows?
Yeah. And then Hachi, who is the administrator for Kosame's team of magical girls, she goes after her own magical girls. She can, like, clone herself and then also use her clones to create this basic, like, huge kind of worm-like form. It's quite terrifying. And then Nana goes after the others, and Nana's ability is basically, like, finger guns, just, like, making that motion and, like, actually harming people. And Tsuno makes one last attempt to kill Nana and protect the others with the force field wand, as always. And Nana ends up killing Tsuno, but also Tsuno does get Nana's arm, so she's got one arm missing. Because she was about to die, something that Tsuno knew was going to happen, she had decided to sacrifice herself, and she dies as Aya is screaming for her, obviously, in the force field, and, you know, tells her that she loves her and is thankful for knowing her because their friendship is important to each other. And then at the end of this, we see a grayscale version of her, like her blonde hair is now, like, a kind of deeper, almost purpley gray. And we see that she has been chosen by the lead administrator named Ichi. So in episode 12, Tsuno becomes a kind of proto-administrator, not quite ready. She doesn't completely transform her form into the way the other administrators look, but she has clearly been at least partially turned. And it's quite an intense bit of conversation. Like, Nana is talking to Tsuno's spirit. We see all these flashbacks of her own misfortune, and, you know, all the sorrow that she has collected with the other magical girls has become this river. And Nana explains that all the darkness of the world will hit you no matter how hard you try to be a good person. It's like, bad things always happen, basically, is the idea.
Mm-hmm.
I do feel like this is largely meant to be, like, kind of the feelings of the show or of the series, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then we have the king, who is the most unfortunate girl in the world.
Mm-hmm.
She's the one that gives other girls the right to be magical girls, basically. Like, she accepts their misfortune as valid, so that they can collect that negative energy for her to feed off of.
Mm-hmm.
And so eventually, once she is ready, then she will create that tempest, the storm that will destroy the world and create a world of salvation. So it kind of sounds a little bit like religious in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Nana turns into an eye during this sequence, and it's generally believed this eye is what's left of her human form. If it's not already clear, all administrators were former magical girls who died, and the girl who becomes Nana is the one of the magical girls in the Magical Girl Sept, so that's mm-hmm. interesting. But yeah, so basically, you know, in the real world, we see that the force field has broken away, but Tsuno, rather than dying, has come back and is now this proto-administrator. And so Aya protects the others by sending them away with her wand, and then tries to fight Tsuno. And they end up going to the beach again for their final fight.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, the idea is that Aya is the last remaining misfortune of Tsuno. So in order for Tsuno to become an administrator, she has to kill Aya.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, we do see that Saiki and Mikari are also fighting off the Hachi clones. And they do end up killing her. It's quite a glorious sword fight, in a way.
Yeah.
It's like one huge swoop, jumping off a building. Very dramatic, very fun. I mean, there's a lot of good action in this series, generally speaking.
Yeah, no, that is very true. The action scenes are so well composed.
Yes, absolutely. But yeah, so this final battle between Aya and Tsuno, Aya decides to try to reach out to her with words. And it's quite literally, like, very dangerous, because, like, Tsuno is, like, strangling Aya as this is happening.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, she keeps talking about how she wants to be stronger and she feels like she's going to betray her in order to save her. And she uses her gun in a new way to transport herself, not to another location, but into Tsuno's memories, particularly mm-hmm. the memory of Tsuno when she was a child after her parents had been murdered. And that interaction ends up finally freeing Tsuno, you know, showing her love, quite literally, like physically taking this heart out of her body and saying, "You gave this to me,
mm-hmm.
And you're not alone." And so they both come to, and Tsuno is back to normal. She's back to her blonde self. And together, they use both their powers to kill Nana and declare that they are no longer unfortunate. They're no longer full of misfortune as they were before.
Mm-hmm.
And the administrators are really unhappy about this. And they say that, you know, these girls, because they have done this, they have committed a sin, like the worst of sins, and they're going to need to be punished with more misfortune, obviously hinting at further events to come.
Yeah.
If they had gotten a season 2, which did not happen, at least as of right now.
Yeah.
And we also see the end result for Kaname is that he is still locked up, and Misumi is there with this room full of magic wands. And he's the one that explains to Kaname that, like, Kaname can't use the wands because, like, it's only girls that actually can use the weapons. That's why there are only girls who are mm-hmm. magical in this world. And he decides that it's up to him to punish Kaname, and it's very heavily hinted at that he is going to punish him with rape. So, yeah, that is the end of this show.
Yeah.
So, before we get into, like, detailing out all the ways this show is problematic, because there's a laundry list,
mm-hmm.
I just want to say again that this show, you know, being a horror show, it's very, very clear from the get-go that, like, this is going to be a dark series. So I don't think the darkness of the show in itself is necessarily a criticism. Though I understand people who don't want magical girls to be crossed over with horror, I do think it is possible to do so responsibly. This is just not a responsible show.
Yeah. It definitely isn't. And like I said, well, the anime noticed that the mangaka didn't really do a lot of these things responsibly because, like I said, the anime definitely handled a lot of things better and cut things that were really unnecessary. And I'm really grateful for that. Like, a lot of things that just seem to be, like, a very terrible fetish for, like, I guess, torture or whatever, they were definitely, like, as dark as it is, they definitely removed a lot of things, and I'm grateful that the anime handled it so well. If it ever gets a second season, I really hope they keep doing that, because the manga definitely needs a lot of polishing, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, again, to cover this kind of thing. Yeah, from my understanding, the comic also has a lot more cases of, like, of rape and so on.
Mm-hmm.
My understanding is the main character, the main magical girl of Sept, is a victim of rape. So that's, like, a major factor. And it's, like, it's okay that these topics exist in a series, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there are ways to handle it appropriately. It just becomes a matter of, like, you know, how to show it and how to, like, imply it so that you understand what's going on without having to see anything that could be triggering to people who have experienced those things in real life. Because
a lot,
like,
of times it's not, well, that's why I said, like, it's not trying to spread awareness. It's just, like, it's like getting off of it. And it's really terrible.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I just wish, again, it could be done better. I do think, you know, I can't talk to about the comic in general, but I do think that even with this version of it, there are still a lot of things that I just think are kind of coming from the writing themselves that just make things a little hard to stomach, basically. But that being said, you know, with the ending, you know, with Aya and Tsuno, who do finally get, you know, close enough that they call each other by their given names, they are, you know, able to use their power of friendship, their power of love. They do say love, they say Daisuke, right? But they use that power to defeat, in this case, the big bad being Nana. It's very, you know, very satisfying in that way. And that, to me, is a very magical girl thing to happen, right? Like, the stakes are so high, everything is so dark, but in the very end, love still wins out.
Love conquers all, exactly.
Yes. Which is also why I do need to talk about the comic, because the comic ruins this at the very end, and I know this is just like, Kentaro Sato is like a major troll or whatever. He knows what he's doing here, but Aya and, so, you know, in this series alone, the subtext between them is very clear. Like, you could very easily read them as being, like, girlfriends.
It definitely implies heavily that they're in love with each other. I think they cut that out of the anime. In the early chapters, I think at some point they even kiss. But the anime cut that out.
So that's the thing, right? So from my understanding, the comic is more explicit about their relationship. Like, they kiss. I don't mind that they cut that out, because at the very, very end of Magical Girl Sight, the comic, they have this kind of final reveal, this final plot twist, that Aya and Tsuno are actually sisters.
Yes, twin sisters.
Yes. So it turns out that they had both been adopted into separate families. And so therefore, like, this incredible, you know, very well well played out, like, romance between two girls, which one would hopefully usually be excited about, is actually incest and is therefore disgusting and deplorable. And it's just so upsetting. Like, it just makes me angry, like, that bit of lore. Like, it's this final troll move of this author to just really mess with the readers in a way that, like, really, it just kind of hurts. Especially because this is a man doing this, and it's, like, about two girls who are in love with each other. I just find it so inappropriate. Like, so much about this is, like, you know, I don't think, it's like, it's not like men can't write magical girl stories. Plenty of men are good at it, right? Mm-hmm. But when it comes to, like, this kind of story where it's about the things that girls go through, you have to be really careful, and this is anything but, you know.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. Very,
yeah,
very tone deaf at times. And also, like I said, unfortunately, like a lot of men, and especially male mangaka, it's more like, it's like, yes, it's about what girls go through, but it's also like the male gaze is heavy with this one. It's heavy. And it has nothing to do there, which makes it even more infuriating, because it's like, dude, there's so much abuse and trauma going on. Why the hell is the male gaze, like, what is it even doing here? Like, it's so gross.
Yes. Yes. I think the main thing, of course, is really wrapped around Nijimi, who, again, you know, she is the same age as the others, right? She's 14, and I think they all are, right? They're all in the same class. But Nijimi's character, like, she's an idol. She's definitely made to look and sound younger than the others,
despite
her actual age.
She is quite literally lonely, yes.
Yes, and that also is part of why it's, like, really gross that, like, her... her weapon, her wand, is her panties. Exactly. I'm sure there's a way to have this kind of plot point in a way that doesn't make us have to look at a 14-year-old girl in her panties, but I can't trust anyone to do that, you know, like, appropriately. I really don't think I can, but... So on top of that aspect in her magical girl story, and also the darkness in her own life, etc., and the fact that, like, her depiction, especially when she is, like, she's falling in love with Kaname and everything, it just makes me feel like this story hates this character, right? They're just, like, making fun of her or something. It's upsetting for me, because, like, I do think there are things to enjoy about her character, but, like, I just, that writing is, it's, for me, it's very harmful, and just, like, disrespects girls, I feel like. Because, like, I completely understand a 14-year-old girl being that foolish, because I was a foolish 14-year-old girl. You know, like, people, like, kids make mistakes all the time. And then on top of that, just to kind of go along with the continued, like, sexualization of, like, the youngest looking character of the series, as an idol, one of the things she does is she has, like, this whole branding within Inosabi. She has, now, they look like cherries, but she calls them oshiringos, or, like, butt apples, right? So they are meant to invoke butts, and they're, like, this constant symbol of hers. So, like, all the fans of hers wear these t-shirts that have that symbol on them. She has, her hair ties have the same symbol. And then even at her own funeral, they also have the same symbol. In the funeral version of them, they're made in flowers that made them look more like breasts than like a butt, which was even weirder.
Yeah.
So it was just all, like, very uncomfortable, basically. Again, like, continuing to be very gross. And then the other thing I wanted to point out, so, like, we mentioned with the transphobia that Kiyoharu experiences, luckily, for the most part, it's just, like, the introduction to her is where we get the most of it. And then after that, it's, like, sometimes the character might make a remark, but it's very... you know, little, because we're kind of in the middle of the big magical girl battle. We don't have time for that.
The fact that they're in there is just so... Oh my god.
Yeah, I can definitely see the argument for it being, like, quote-unquote realistic to show her going through that, but we don't really need to see that.
No.
Like, we get it.
Especially for... yeah. The whole point of these girls, like you said, like, even though they don't even like each other, they find solidarity in their suffering, right? And then they're basically fighting together against, like, the influences from the outside. So to have them on the inside, like, start being so transphobic, like, that actually made me so upset, because it was like, what the hell? Like,
yeah, it's very sad. But yeah, but to go and kind of go along with that queer phobia, we have to talk about, like, the kind of end result with Misumi and Kaname. So, like, you know, Kaname was obviously a horrible person, but this idea of, like, punishing him in the story with being raped by a man is really awful, really gross, along with the fact that Detective Misumi is presumably an adult raping a child, because Kaname, for all of his faults, he is still underage.
Yeah.
It's super, super gross. It's also like the only, we don't know how, what Misumi's actual like sexuality is.
Yeah, but
it's but
very, yeah.
Yeah. If he is queer, then like he is shown as like the only queer man in the whole series. And he's a rapist. Yes.
And a rapist.
Just absolutely gross. So it really, really sucks. Again, it's just like, there are so many ways to do this kind of story and not be gross, and they just managed to hit every gross mark, and then
like,
some.
You just throw sexual assault and rape on everything, like, possibly. Like, it's just...
It's lazy writing,
it's
honestly.
It's very lazy, and like I said, especially with the manga, there's literally moments where I'm just like, this is a fetish. This isn't even storytelling anymore. It's just a fetish.
Yeah.
It's a fetish for sure.
It's very unfortunate. Luckily, again, he is not... He's still working. But Sato is not doing Magical Girls anymore, thank the Lord. yes. With all that, I do think that's all I have to say about it. But I'm very curious about, for you, Yase, and your experience, especially because I'm not really as big a horror person as you might be, I think. I'm very curious about like how you felt about the show as a whole, you know, putting the problematic elements aside.
I thought it had a lot of potential. Like I said, I watched it before Madoka, so I was like really, really positively surprised when I saw that, because I was like, ooh, that's pretty cool. This aspect of it like just being so dark and basically the way all of them just turn into magical girls because they suffer, and then it's not even a reward, honestly. It's more like it causes them more suffering. Basically, and I thought the show was okay. Like I said, like the problematic aspects took away a lot. I thought the story was really interesting. I was genuinely interested in the narrative, the characters, and I ended up being very invested in the story, wanting to know what's going on, what this tempest is. I was definitely here for the character development, and showing the different effects that trauma has on people and how different people or different girls, you know, deal with their trauma differently. And I like that everyone got so much, I guess, perspective for it. I didn't know how I felt about Serena being redeemed, I guess, quote unquote. It was odd.
Yeah.
But all in all, I did enjoy it. I just wish the narrative would have gotten more priority than all the other weird things that unfortunately made it in with there, because I thought the narrative alone was really, really good and interesting.
Yeah, that makes sense. Again, like you said, so much potential here. There's so much going on that's like really interesting, and I do think that it's interesting, you know, as a horror series, right? Like, they really do put all the dark stuff about the rules and everything right off the top, right? Like, it's they really, really, like, make the rules very clear. They show the kind of tempest thing very clearly. Like, yes, there are certainly some, you know, small comparisons you can make to Madoka, but, like, honestly, not really, because, like,
yeah, exactly.
A lot of things happened between 2011 and 2019, and it's, like, I think that, you know, there was already, like, dark stuff going on in the genre before Madoka, right? So it's, yeah.
Actually, I am so tired of everything dark, like, oh, that's just Madoka, and it's like, y'all just like only watch Madoka.
I mean,
why is Madoka always being brought up? Like, we literally had, like, we had Utena, even Kamikaze Kaifu Jean, like, it was so dark at times. Like, come on.
Absolutely. So it's just like, so it's so silly that there's we've said it a lot of times on the podcast before, like, there have been dark things, a twist in Madoka have happened before, you know, so it's not that shocking.
Yeah, please put other dark magical girl series besides Madoka. It's the comparison gets so tired after a while. Like, I saw someone say for Magical Girl Side that, you know, they get these emblems on their wrist that, like, basically depicts their lifespans, and every time they use magic, it just depletes a little. And then somebody was like, this is just grief seeds. And I'm like, no, it's not. What?
Yeah, it's very silly, because, like, I mean, even if it was like taking from Madoka, which I don't think it really is that much, like, I think that, you know, there's so much that's going on here that's like a lot more straightforward than Madoka, right? I think the big thing about Madoka was that it was a surprise.
It was very psychological, yeah. Like, Madoka took a very psychological approach, and Magical Girl's Side is just, if I use a comparison, like, spoilers from Madoka here, if anyone hasn't watched it yet, but Sayaka is heavily implied, like, heavily implied, but still only implied to have killed someone when she's slowly turning insane. Now, with Magical Girl's Side, like, oh, you see people just die. Like, they just straight up murder people, and people just straight up die, and there is nothing magical or philosophical or symbolical about it. Like, people just straight up die, and it's just straight up violence, and that's where the horror aspect comes in, because, like, Madoka is really psychological, and Magical Girl Scout just straight up does things, like, in the gore and horror, and very graphic sense, too. Like, there's nothing symbolical about it.
Yeah, there's, you know, it's dark. I think there's space for darkness in to this degree, right, with Magical Girls. Again, if done appropriately, I think this is... There's a lot of work that can be done here, but it's fine, whatever. It's, like, really interesting to see how people reacted to it, like, especially, like, right off the gate. I think that a lot of people who... really were not into the idea, or just like not into horror in general, which again I totally understand because I'm not really a horror person myself, but yeah, it's just like it's fine for you to not be interested in every Magical Girl series out there.
That's okay. Yeah, exactly. Like just because it's I guess one genre doesn't mean it can't have a lot of subgenres. Like it's completely okay if you like some of the precursors that others say are quote-unquote only for children. Like, it's completely okay if you like warm and gushy Magical Girls, where at the end of the day everything's only okay. And like, I actually talked about this like just yesterday when playing a game, like a lot of things these days seem to be like no, there has to be like drama or tragicness or I don't know, just sadness and stuff for it to be mature or whatever. Like, no, it's okay for media to just be happy and have happy endings and just be rewarding. Like, that's completely okay. And if you only enjoy media like that, that is also completely okay. There's so much going on in the world. It's completely understandable and okay to just want to consume, like, happy media.
Totally. Yes. So with that, I think that's everything you had to talk about. So, yeah, we're down to the last question. So, Yase, do you have a magical persona for yourself? Have you ever imagined yourself as a magical person?
I've always wanted to be a witch from Doremi. As a kid, I just thought they were so cute, and I am very, like, musical. Like, I play a lot of instruments. I love music. You know, I'm an artist. I have a lot of artistic aspects to myself, so... everything in Doremi was just so great. Like, I would have loved to be a witch like that. As a kid, I always wanted to be for sure. I just the outfits, the transformations, the themes. I just thought all of it was so great. I definitely want to be one now that I'm talking about it.
Yeah, that sounds like fun. I think that's definitely a world that was very good for kids to jump into, I think.
Yes, I'm definitely... like, it was great, because, yeah, like I said, I had Doremi and Futari wa Precure, which was, I mean, Futari wa Precure definitely also had dark themes, like, that's true. And even Doremi wasn't always completely, like, happy, for sure, but it was definitely, like, I guess, more digestible and friendlier. And then Jean was a little darker, for sure. Like, it had a lot of heavy themes, and religious themes, too. Sure, and it's really cool that it was like early on I noticed, like, wow, like these are definitely different to each other, and there's definitely a lot of different aspects and narratives going on here, even though all of these are magical girl stories. So I really like that the genre can be that there's something for everyone in here.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Yeah, awesome. So yeah, I think that's everything I have to talk about. So thank you again for coming on the podcast to talk about Magical Girl Sight.
Thank you for having me.
And where can people find you and follow you online to talk about this show and other magical girls?
Oh, yeah. You can find me on Instagram. My tag is art by Nakimushi, like Nakimushi like crybaby in Japanese. And then on Twitter, too, it's Nakimushi art, but the I's are L's, like low capital L's. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you can find me there. Feel free to ask if you have any questions or if you're just interested in seeing my art. I think I'm a very approachable person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, awesome. So the links to that will be in the show notes. So thank you again, and I hope you have a good rest of your day.
Thank you. You too. And take care.
Whether this was your first or last time listening, thank you so much for checking out this episode of Sparkle Side Chats with Magical Girl Ayu. We hope you check out the rest of our chats, over 2 years of magical content and counting. And if you like what you heard, tell a friend, or tell 5 friends, or tell the whole world by talking about us online. If you use social media, don't forget to use the hashtag SparkleSideChats when talking about and sharing the podcast. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at MagicalGirlAyu, spelled A-Y-U, and you can find me at AyuShinos, AyuShekNows. You can also email us at sparklesidechats@gmail.com. Did you know we also take recommendations for future guests and topics? Just fill out the form in the show notes. You can even suggest yourself if you're so bold. The very best free way to support the podcast is using your podcast platform to give a rating and review of our little show. This gives the big internet machines the message that they should share it with more people, and I think we all want that, don't we? You can also join the Discord server for this podcast to talk about magical girls 24/7, often chatting directly with me and both previous and upcoming guests of the podcast. The forever link is in the show notes as well as on the socials, so be sure to stop by. Show notes can be found on your podcast platform of choice or at our main landing page at anchor.fm/sparkleside. If you have a few bucks, you can give a one-time donation at ko-fi.com or ko-fi.com/ayushinos. You can also commit to a monthly membership, which grants you access to bonus episodes about magical girls and adjacent content such as movies, comics, and other series that magical girl fans tend to also love. All it takes is $5 a month, but if you want to rank up, that'll give you discounts on art commissions and monthly requests as well. Music credits, as always, are also in the show notes. Original podcast music is by Hazel. You can find her on Twitter at A Few Bruises. Thanks again for listening, and remember, you are magical, forever and always. See you next time!